News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Erwig.
Hey, Dan and Dalton, Friday morning. We'll hear from Lance Pride this hour.
Good.
As he salutes us on a Friday, for some reason he felt the need to do what? We'll get around to that. Also, Biden and the entire administration pretty much reversing course on how that we, you know, should approach this pandemic. Are we going to try to beat it? If you can't beat him, you join him, right?
Yeah.
He's suddenly saying, if you can't beat him, join him. And he's talking about COVID.
We are now allies with COVID.
So we'll get around to that. Also, I think the Luberdet story is really, really interesting. He was a guest on Jeff Poor's show yesterday. He's going to make a run for governor, but this is an earnest guy for sure. He's a talented businessman. He's got an incredible backstory. And we'll hear him on a number of things, including the issue of where hospitals can and cannot be, and how a hospital in a rural area of Alabama probably saved his life, as it turns out. And we are also a nation of caring and compassionate people.
I would say so, yeah.
And we say that with pride because we have that history of doing just that. But when it comes to the Boston Marathon bomber receiving COVID relief as he was in prison, right?
Yeah.
So,
and that's just the tip of it.
Yeah. Sarnaev. Is that? I forget.
Yeah, Dzhokhar Tsarnaev.
Tsarnaev. He received stimulus checks. This was Democrats cleared the way for the convicted murderers like this guy to receive stimulus checks when they passed the American Rescue Plan of 2021 last March without a GOP amendment that would have blocked inmates from receiving the checks. Now, I think the thinking was, help me if I'm wrong, I may steer off.
I would love to hear any theory on this because I don't get it.
It had to do with the people outside of jail that weren't receiving any income from daddy because he's in prison, or mommy who's in prison. So it was actually for the family.
Okay.
I think that was the way it was presented. Anyway, he was ordered by prosecutors to return $1,400 of COVID-19 relief payment he received last summer. That's unbelievable. Along with other money sent to him, according to a court filing on Wednesday. So far, he's only paid $2,202.03 of the more than $101 million in restitution owed to his victims.
Yeah, he owes $101 million.
And we were sending him money in prison.
Yeah.
Like, will this help?
And the money wasn't going back towards the victims.
No. The filing said that the $1,400 in COVID-19 relief money should instead be used as restitution. Tsarnaev was sentenced to death 2 years after the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing, which left three people dead and hundreds hurt. That was a horrible day. That was a horrible event. And remember the frantic police chase afterwards?
It happened overnight. And I remember that was the first or one of the first nights that I stayed up on Twitter following as closely as I could that entire chase as they searched for him and his brother. Remember at one point, I think it was the one that survived, Dzhokhar, that was hiding in a boat.
Hiding in a boat with it was a covered up boat in somebody's driveway or backyard.
Yeah, and he was bleeding at that point. I think he'd already been hit by...
How did his brother die?
He was ran over, remember? I believe that's how his brother died. My memory is not crystal clear. And then I did look this up. You mentioned he was sentenced to death. They did overturn that. They vacated the death sentence 2 years ago, back in 2020. He is in prison still on several life sentences. But you would think if there was a slam dunk for the death sentence, that'd be this joker.
No kidding. Senator Tom Cotton warned in March that convicts like Tsarnaev would benefit from the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief bill, which included $1,400 stimulus checks for individuals making less than $75,000 a year. Well, that'd be people in prison.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really chatting up their accountant. when it comes no. when it comes to the end of the year. Cotton, along with Senators Bill Cassidy of Louisiana and Ted Cruz of Texas, ordered an amendment on the floor at the same time to block checks from prisoners, but it failed on party line vote 49-50. So I guess that would have been a Kamala Harris vote that broke that. And anyway, both Cotton and Cassidy voted in favor of two COVID-19 relief bills under the Trump administration that also did not exclude prisoners from receiving stimulus checks. Cruz voted against both bills that offered $1,200 and $600 checks. So where's your government money going? Where did the COVID relief go? Remarkably enough, to people like him.
That's sickening, really. Yeah. And listen to this. There have been people sending him money in jail. He's at a maximum security prison in Colorado. They say Tsarnaev has received over $21,000 since he became an inmate. Some deposits were made by the Office of Federal Defenders of New York. Said they put in $11,000 from May 2016 to June 2021. So I don't know if those funds were going back into his defense or exactly how that was working. They said that money into his account by 35 individuals, including three people from New Jersey, Indiana, and Maryland. And then also, as you mentioned, the $1,400 relief payment from the COVID checks. Mm. But don't you think, wouldn't you want to know who the 35 people are that sent him money?
You sure would.
And I'm sure, well, I would hope that our spy agencies or someone is keeping pretty close tabs on who those people would be.
Yeah, they could be dangerous people, right? I mean, if they're sympathizers of who he is and what he did.
Yeah.
By the way, Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, argued back in March that prisoners' children could be affected by withholding the money from them. So that was the angle on this. That's why prisoners were getting. And I forgot about that story until it would kind of reemerge on Fox News.
Yeah, and Terry, flashing back there to that day, he said Jokar, the one who survived, ran over his brother when the police showed up. Wow. So the brother got out to check on the car. And then, yeah, they later found Jokar found hiding in a boat in a backyard. That's exactly how that played out.
Mm-mm-mm.
That's crazy.
Stimulus money for prisoners. I mean, the same as what we were talking about, the ACL settlement for families separated at the border.
That's right, where they were talking about possibly $1 million.
$800,000 to $1 million per family.
Yeah.
You know, these things they sound like punchlines, but it's our money,
mm-hmm.
and it's the decisions on where these federal dollars, our money, should go are absurd.
It's gotten ridiculous. It's been ridiculous for a long time. And those two things that we just mentioned, Tsarnaev and other inmates on death row receiving those funds, the talk of settlements with folks who illegally crossed the border, mm-hmm. which they turned around after Americans were upset by it, it has a lot of people saying, you know, what's going on with America nowadays? Are we in a decline? And there's a new poll out. Trafalgar Group held this poll, and I think they had right around 1,000 or 1,500 poll respondents, so not the littlest poll, but also certainly not the biggest sample size. They said just over 76% of voters believe that American society and culture are in a state of decay. 76.8% say that. About 9.8% say culture and society are in a state of progress, and 13.4% are uncertain. 85.9% of Republicans say that U.S. is in a state of decay. 4.3% of Republicans believe our society and culture are in a state of progress. 9.7% uncertain. Meanwhile, 61% of Democrats believe that the nation is in a state of decay.
So really?
86% of Republicans have a more pessimistic view of the future of the United States. 61% of Democrats still are pessimistic.
You wonder if the 61% of Democrats have got different reasons for thinking that the country's in decline than the Republicans do. Almost, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think very often, while that's still a huge number, 61% of Democrats that believe the U.S. is in a state of decay, think of many of the most liberal people are very well off and have been living in a bubble their entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
They probably think that, you know, everything is fine and dandy. Now, there are a lot of Democrats who are on the complete opposite side of the spectrum there as far as class goes, and,
yep.
and they probably feel like things are about as bad as they've ever been. But it's saddening to know that that so many Americans feel that way. But not surprising, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think also Jeff talks about this a lot, and I know some of the listeners aren't crazy about it when he brings it up, but there is this old pendulum swing, and there is going to be an election here in 2022. And, you know, and as far as yesterday, you know, yeah, it was, you know, when you look back at those images that were from a year ago, it was an awful day. It mm-hmm. was a terrible day. It made me sick to my stomach. But the way it's being, you know, this eulogy about this horrible day, again, just overplayed.
They held a candlelight vigil last
night.
Yeah,
I mean, it's you know, report it, learn from it, but don't dramatize it. And that's what happened yesterday. And I didn't have any stomach for the day it happened, and I didn't have any stomach for the way it was represented a year later.
I mentioned it earlier. I want to get around to some comments from a sniper with
yes.
the Army Rangers,
right,
former MMA fighter Tim Kennedy. A lot of times I like to go to our nation's heroes and see what they have to say about some of the ridiculous comparisons yesterday made by the vice president
yeah.
regarding January 6th.
Right, we'll do that next. Also, your comments and calls, if you like, at 251-343-0106. Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. Try to get Kane's traffic back up here. It's 8:22 on FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton. Somebody was on the line, wanted to talk to us, but then he decided he didn't have the time. And I guess that can happen, too. We had a long break there.
You know, when I mentioned that poll of the Americans, the field, the U.S. is in a state of decay,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to turn it and say, you know, I'm optimistic. I think we can turn this thing around. But then you get a stupid caller like that who has zero listening comprehension.
Well, evidently he was mad at us for comparing what happened January 6th to 9/11 on. And we're like, no, that's we didn't get a chance to talk to him. But obviously that was in the presentation given by Vice President Kamala Harris.
Right.
And she actually, it was kind of a boomerang because she quickly received backlash for
She doesn't
making those comparisons.
No, and there are plenty of people that agree wholeheartedly with the Democrats that feel that January 6, 2021 was on par with two of the worst days in American history. Of course, the bombing of Pearl Harbor and 9/11. But that's exactly what our vice president said yesterday. And there were quite a few people who responded online, some notable people, some very many people that aren't as notable. There's this guy I follow on Twitter, Tim Kennedy. He's a former UFC fighter. He's also a sniper with the Army Rangers. And I would say former sniper, but I think he is just went back out and maybe came back. He's still fighting off and on. But he has said some very interesting things over the years. He's been on plenty of podcasts. I'm not sure if he's been on the Joe Rogan podcast, but I've seen him on several different interviews.
What's his name again?
Tim Kennedy.
Okay.
And so he's special ops,
mm-hmm.
sniper, Army Ranger, UFC fighter. He was a really good UFC fighter. Maybe not best in the world good, but
get on TV.
But he was, yeah, and a popular one as well. So he was responding to what the vice president and others said yesterday. And let me just read this to you. So he said, "I'm against all forms of terrorism. I'm against all forms of political violence. I think each and every act and actor should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, whether that be at a riot in Chicago, Minneapolis, or even in Washington, D.C., something that I've said and many have said that, you know, if you break the law, you should be held accountable. The same people that broke the law in the summer riots
right.
should be held accountable. People
right.
that broke into the Capitol should be held accountable. So Tim Kennedy continued on, "But the thought of comparing January 6th to the September 11th attack or to the attack at Pearl Harbor is not just disingenuous. It's heartless, idiotic, and cowardice. Anybody that would use the two most significant events in American history that led to our two most deadly wars should be ashamed. And any politician that would even utter such a comparison should be voted out or impeached. September 11th started a war against radical extremists that lasted for 20 years. Thousands of American soldiers were killed in combat, and 2,977 died on the day that it all began in the crumbling steel, smoke, and ashes of the two towers. On December 7th, 1941, 2,335 Americans, mostly service members, died, again trapped in burning steel, smoke, and ashes, while an additional 6,000 went on to die fighting the Japanese." Kennedy continued, "Shame on you politicians for leveraging these brave men and women's deaths to your advantage. Shame on you. Never have I been more ashamed of our political spectacle. Make no mistake about it, January 6th was unacceptable, and if anyone internal to the government fostered it, they too should be dealt with. But this comparison is disgusting, and the acts of violence that occurred all over our nation from 2016 through 2020 should be equally as infuriating. I thought those words from Tim Kennedy were right on.
It's like it's the opposite of what he was comparing or what he was describing, because that is the word that I was looking for. Disingenuous is what it was. Unless they believe it themselves, but any sensible human being would know that those comparisons just don't cut it. And so you take this event, which was a terrible day, looked awful. I'm sure that it was a terrible day for the Capitol Police. They probably had terrible days and months after that, and to even think anything like that could happen. You do need to look at why security wasn't more beefed up with the idea that the rally was going to be there. It's horrible that it happened. It's horrible that, looking back on it, a lot of people just kind of streamed in. It looked like a field trip gone wrong.
Right.
But there were other agitators who were busting their way in. It was a bad look. Terrible. But good Lord. Yesterday, I just couldn't. Once I saw where the direction was going and what this day was going to be for the administration and for the Democrats in office, I just wouldn't have any part of it. And there was just my time could be spent better because of the disingenuous nature of the whole presentation. That day was bad. So let's not treat it like something else. Let's not make it worse than it was. And it was so political, it was disgusting.
And imagine, there were people that probably sat on the couch all day yesterday watching it, eating it up.
Absolutely
eating it up.
I agree.
But then these same people, they wonder why they're not trusted when it comes to, really important things, like a worldwide pandemic. Mm-hmm. And for their, followers that blindly follow it. Here's another, Ashley Babbitt. Yeah, everyone keeps saying, say your name. We've said it.
Yeah.
Ashley Babbitt was the only one killed that day during the January 6th riot. And so these politicians and their followers who are like, why don't you listen to the government? Why don't you go do this? Why don't you go do that? They have your best interest in mind. How can you look someone in the eye and say that they have your best interest in mind and that every single thing they do isn't about their political gain when they go out and do something like they did yesterday? I mean, a candlelight vigil, it's absurd. They cut to the cast of Hamilton singing some song about liberty and freedom when apparently that was recorded months earlier and had nothing
to do with that.
It's so absurd, but they know that they have their followers.
Well, and now also the idea that the investigation into January 6th is going to crescendo with live
prime
hearings
time
on primetime TV
leading into the November elections.
I mean, that could that whole thing be any more disingenuous? So I just don't, I have a disdain for that sort of political posturing, and yesterday was it at its worst.
Yeah, it was really bad. Let's see. Keith says, Tim Kennedy has been on Rogan. It's a great podcast. He's also an active special forces operator in addition to being Ranger qualified. This texter says, Dalton, that guy was dead on. That's what everyone needs to know. Terry says, Ray Epps didn't kill himself. Oops, too soon. Yeah, Ray Epps is one of the alleged leaders of the Oath Keepers who's on video, face uncovered, and he has not been indicted
like
the rest of the
very,
people that were there.
Very strange.
Tony
very
said, strange. You said it right. They're sitting on the couch all day. That tells you about all you need to know. And Dan says, thank you. That's been killing me.
Yeah, It's 830 FM Talk 106.5. Let's meet Lou Burdette.
Yeah, okay.
Next half hour.
Stay on the phone lines there for us, too. We'll come to you here in just a few minutes.
Dan and Dalton, call 251-343-0106 to FM Talk 106.5.
Thank you, Kane. 8:35 now on FM Talk 106.5. Right now, time to head to McConnell Automotive, where we talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing great here, end of the week, heading into the weekend. And you got some trade-ins there at McConnell to talk about.
That's right, man. We're trading in a few trucks. We've got some trucks coming in and some Yukons coming in. Got an AT4 Yukon there. As of yesterday afternoon, it was not sold. It's that good-looking maroon color, which we know about the maroon color, Roll Tide. We got to put that in there. But, yeah, we're trading in a few trucks, too. Traded in an 18 Denali yesterday with 70,000 miles on it. Traded in a 20 Denali. These are all three-quarter ton diesels. A 23-quarter ton diesel Denali with 22,000 miles on it. And Dalton, you're going to like this one, a 21 AT4 three-quarter ton.
Oh, yeah.
All diesel. That one's got 12,000 miles on it. We traded that one in. And I mean, we've got some great deals out there. You can check all those out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. And if you got any questions, call Nick, Gene, or I, 251-476-4141. Check the website out. You know, Gene's about trying to buy some more cars, so y'all got something to sell, call him, give him the VIN and the miles and a little description. He'll give you a price right over the telephone.
All right.
Everybody has a safe weekend and come see us.
We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That is Louie Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, 837 FM Talk 106.5. It is Mobile Mornings, and I want to go to the phone lines right now.
Yeah, let's go to the phone lines and talk with George in Mobile. Good morning, George.
Hey, guys. I've been meaning to call you guys, but you know, we go back to the 2020 election. People say it was a big lie. I just want to point out a few things. Every swing state took every mail-in ballot they could get.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether it was North Carolina, Virginia, Georgia. Let's use the state of Georgia, for example. On average, typical year, their mail-in ballots, they either throw out 6 to 8% of them, whether because people weren't registered to vote, they voted at the wrong precinct, the signatures didn't match, or they just wasn't on the voter rolls. Okay? This past, in 2020, they threw out... Let me get it right. It was 0.34%
mm-hmm.
of zero. So they took everything to get. It probably wouldn't have changed the popular vote. That's true. But I think it would have been enough for Trump to win the election. The problem lies in this. Nobody had the manpower to go buy a vote, buy a vote, buy a vote, and check everything.
Right.
That was the whole problem, especially with the deadline they had.
And you know,
such an unusual. It was a completely unusual election the way it all went about, and it was so contested. That was one of the worst elections that you could have. Any kind of people worried about is the vote real?
And I think
Michigan normally throws out anywhere from, you know, they're not 6 to 8. Normally they throw out 10%. This past time they threw out a total of 28 in the whole state. Or his mail-in ballot.
Total of 28 votes.
Yes.
It's stats like that that make people, and you would hope nonpartisan people, to want to dig into something like that. I think a major issue here, George, is there's been a lack of an ability for the folks who believe that this election was not a fair election. There's been a lack of ability to kind of convey that via their words to people that you would want to gather on your side of the fence. I think what Trump has been saying and what so many have been saying is that the way that particular states changed the rules going in, and they said it was all because of COVID, but they made it much easier to harvest ballots.
If you can count, the counts are right, but how many of them should have been thrown out is totally up. It's totally the question. And nobody's really even tried to go by vote and check it.
Mm-hmm. And now the big question is, though, with 2022
yep.
here and more elections on the way, is how do you bounce back? How do you respond from that? That's the question the Republicans have to answer.
Well, you know, we got out, 16 more million votes this time. The Republicans did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we should start doing mail-in ballot, too.
That's a good point,
I mean,
there, George.
I hate to say it, but early voting is fun. But here's my deal. Guys, I voted in two states my entire life, Mississippi and Alabama. And every time that I voted, like last time I voted absentee in Mississippi, you get a mail-in ballot. You go into a room. You fill it out at the courthouse. It goes into a sealed envelope. Then you drop it into a box. It never leaves that courthouse, much less that room.
Yeah. And
that's the way it should be. Mail-in ballots, this is ridiculous, guys.
There were states where they would mail those ballots to literally every person, mm-hmm. and exactly. then just go around and pick them up. Pretty crazy looking back, and there's, you know, a large portion of America that just doesn't want to hear any conversation about it, and automatically lump you in with the, you know, the people that we're not a nation right now that can have that conversation, which is ridiculous because it's what's going on right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversations everybody's running and hiding from or ignoring altogether. Thanks for the call, George. We appreciate
have a great
it.
Day, guys.
You
Thank
got
you.
It, man. Yeah, voter integrity. I mean, you know, that's got to be – that's the election integrity has got to be at the heart of what we're doing every election day. Because yeah. if you don't have that, what do you have? Well, you have what we're dealing with now.
And you can tell how important it is for Democrats that every election from here on out is carried out in the same manner. Or if it wasn't that important to them, they wouldn't have used yesterday. You know, I mentioned they used January 6, 2021 and compared it to Pearl Harbor and 9/11. Well, they also used it for a big push for what they call, you know, the Democrats would say are fair voting rights, mm-hmm. but really it's just a push to have every election be as chaotic as the last election.
Yeah.
That's what they want. That's the end goal here. Right now, Manchin and Sinema are standing in the way because they want to do away with the filibuster just to push through Pelosi's voting bill that she began trying to push through a while back. But, if they had it their way, every single election would be that exact same way. But we appreciate the call this morning, George. And let's go back to the phones here. And who do we have online too?
Matt is with us right now. Hey, Matt.
Hey, good morning, y'all.
Morning.
I don't think the question is even whether the election's were stolen or not. Anybody that's watched the state, you can't watch the state hearings and then not know that the election was stolen. I mean, the sky's blue because you look at it, right?
Right.
So if you know the election's stolen, you look at it. Look at the state hearings. Look at the evidence. And if you have, there's no way you can't come to the conclusion the election was stolen. So that's a fact. The election was stolen. Fact that pharmaceutical drug industry has taken over our country. We're no longer run by our government anymore. We don't have a government of the people right now. We've been hijacked. The United States Corporation has been purchased, and it has been for a long time now. We are not a government. We're a corporation actually that has shareholders. If you read the state COVID orders that Governor Ivey put out, that Governor Ivey didn't write them. They're the same for every state.
Right, copy and paste.
It says in there the United States has shareholders that are enforcing all of this. So, you know, it's the pharmaceutical drug industry, Pfizer. So everything you see, every bit of news that you hear is actually bought and paid for. The research companies that give the news stations the information, that give the hospitals the information, is the same research and marketing company that creates the statistics for COVID. They create all this, and then they, in order to give the population a desire to go get a vaccine. So it's all just a sales and marketing scheme. We're no longer in charge of our government. The question is, what do we do about it is the question. I mean, we can, you know, keep talking about it on the news and, you know, let everybody know and win the information war to where everybody knows. Which that's good. More and more people are waking up to the fact that, you know, these vaccines are not for our benefit. They're not for our health. There's an underlying motive behind the vaccines. You know, so a lot more people know that now. It'd be great if everyone knew it, you know, but there's still a lot of people that are lost and that still believe that mainstream news is actually source of real information. And so, you know, if our country gets taken over and we no longer are the United States anymore and we become communist China, are we going to do anything about it? And what can we do about it is the question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And, you know, I was waiting for him to get to China because he had a lot to say there. Without getting to our ties with China, with our business world, and that's a pretty big mess.
And I think a major issue, one that he brought up there, that was brought up with Nancy Pelosi just around a month ago, insider trading and Congress.
Yeah,
how much better off would we be if they were not allowed to trade? You know, you could say that Pfizer has bought them off. I think
the closer reality is that they all knew what was coming before everyone else in America did, and you're able to get your stock buys in on the Pfizers, and of course they have lobbyists that pay big money in the form of speaking fees or whatever it may be. And I'm not just talking about pharmaceutical companies, but any major corporation that's able to kind of sway someone like that. There are ways to get money to these politicians, and I don't think there would ever be a crystal clear way to make sure that politicians have America's best interests in mind. But when you look at, you know, the salary that's brought in by these congressmen and congresswomen, and then see how much they're, it's something that's been said forever and ever, but their net worth when they leave office,
it's incredible,
compared to when they go into office. And then you wonder why they want to do everything exactly the way Pfizer says to it, or Moderna, or, you know, Coca-Cola, whoever it may be. Well, it's because they stand to gain a lot of money that way. And I just wonder, it doesn't seem very American, but if congressmen and women weren't allowed to trade, I think we'd be at least a little bit better off.
I think the stat I saw one time surrounding Washington, D.C., there are the seven wealthiest counties in the United States of America surround our nation's capital.
Really?
Where policy is, I guess, bought and sold.
That's a stat right there.
846 FM Talk 106.5. Do want to just play a clip of an outsider who's going to be running for governor here. We'll do that on the way, plus some parting shots. Jeff Poor Show and that lineup on coming up. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, and Jeff Poor is on the way.
Yeah, he has another great round of guests today. He spoke with one gubernatorial candidate yesterday. We'll have more on Lou Burdette in just a minute. We'll talk to another in the first hour today, Dave Thomas, the mayor of Springville, Alabama, is coming on the show. Remember, we discussed him a little bit earlier this week. He just jumped into the race. He says he smokes marijuana. He's pro-weed and anti-tax. Doesn't like any taxes.
Well, he probably didn't jump into the race then. He just kind of
moseyed
into the race.
Moseyed into the race. Second hour, and I'm really looking forward to that interview, by the way. Second hour, April Marie Fogel with Alabama Today. Third hour, Congressman Mo Brooks joins the show, and State Senator Chris Elliott, the returning champion, as Jeff likes to call him. So another good Jeff Poor Show on the way next.
So Lou Burdette yesterday on Jeff Poor Show talking about, you know, he was saying, look, the people we've elected all these years, longtime politicians, or what's the term that is used for
career politicians,
you know, look at what they've given us. We're 50th in this, we're 49th in that, you know, as far as our ranking around the country in education, health, and so forth. He also talked about certificate of need, about a board being able to say yes or no to a hospital being placed somewhere. The reason that he has the opinion he has is very personal. This is an amazing story. When he was 15 years old, he was the victim of an incredible crime.
One area is another area of bureaucracy, certificate of need. Sometimes we hear about that. That, you know, it gets in the weeds on all this policy stuff, but certificate of need is the way that powerful hospitals and hospital administration keeps health care out of the desperately needed areas of rural Alabama, like where I grew up. I grew up in a little East Alabama town. I hope people will go read my story at lewin22.com. I was victim of a violent crime as a 15-year-old teenager. If we hadn't had that little small town rural hospital where I grew up there, I would have died that night. I should have died in the bottom of that well. I was kidnapped, shot, stabbed, thrown in a well, and eventually made it to a hospital where they saved my life. And if that rural hospital hadn't been in Roanoke, I wouldn't have made it that night.
How in the world did he survive all that?
He said kidnapped,
shot,
stabbed, and thrown in a well.
Yeah. Put that together and go to Vegas and see what the odds are that guy walked away somehow.
Seriously.
So he went on to become, he went to work at Books A Million. Then he went on to become CEO of Books A Million.
That's something.
And then he's dedicated his life to this
King's Ranch?
Yeah, this Chelsea-based ministry of 22 therapeutic group homes and independent living facilities. This is all for children that have been abused and women as well. A little bit like what we've got here over on Old Shell Road.
Penelope House?
Yeah, Penelope House and the other larger facility, right?
Yeah, I know. It's escaping me right now.
And Wilmer Hall.
That's it.
So he has empathy for those who've been abused. He points out, I was not abused as a child, but I've suffered, you know, in incredible pain in that attack. So what a story. What a obviously genuine man who's the life story is like a movie.
Yeah. I wonder if the next gubernatorial candidate that's coming on Jeff's show today, Dave Thomas, I wonder if he heard that and if he's like, I have to follow that?
Like, I think I have a cough today. I don't know that I can come on. But anyway, it is an interesting story. We were kidding about him because of the name being the same as the Braves pitcher from years ago. What are the odds? But then when you look at his actual story, wow. Somebody to sincerely considered what he's been through, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think we're seven deep now in the gubernatorial race. Seven people in the race, and it seems like it's going to take a mammoth upset in order to knock Governor Kay Ivey off her perch. And that clip you played there, he's talking about Certificate of Need and health care. There's a story out from WKRG. So earlier this week, Mobile County Public Schools made what I thought was a pretty surprising shift in how they were going to go about this school year, because you see school districts across the country going back to many remote learning, which is absurd at this point, but most mask mandates. The Archdiocese of Mobile, I think they went to a mask mandate. Baldwin County Public Schools decided to do mask optional, which was pretty consistent with what we've seen from Eddie Tyler over there this year. I was fully expecting Kressel Threadgill, the superintendent of Mobile Schools, to do mask mandates, but he went mask optional as well.
It didn't do it. That surprised me too.
It surprised me. Well, WKRG says that that Threadgill, when he made that decision, went against a recommendation from the Mobile County Health Department.
I would think so.
Mobile County Health Officer Bernard Eichhold, Dr. Eichhold, he sent a letter to school leaders Monday recommending that masks be required. And the superintendent, Threadgill, came out later and went mask optional. And I wanted to say this earlier, we kind of ran out of time. There are a lot of, and I think a vast majority of healthcare professionals who are truly looking out for, they feel looking out for people. And they have been tasked with, maybe unfairly, being the ones to lead us out of this pandemic.
True.
But a lot of times, even though they're way smarter than I am, especially in that field, it's a pretty singular profession, right? Their deal is to make people better, and many times to try to avoid people getting sick. But they know nothing of mental, they might know some, but generally they don't know how this is affecting the long-term mental health of students or so many other aspects that come into play when you're talking about something that involves every part of the American economy, whether it's healthcare, which has been greatly affected, education, business, it's all been affected. And there are so many different prongs to it that I think blindly following healthcare leaders is a mistake. And it's not because they have any, you know, because they want America to suffer. I think it's the exact opposite. But I think that you need to have people of different expertise in different areas to
contributing to the process.
Exactly.
Here's the question, and then what's the answer will tell you what we need to know is, will we do it exactly the same way next time? And the answer is probably no.
No.
Now, it may depend on when the next time really is, because, you know, like hurricanes, you forget you ever had a hurricane, you know, until the next one comes. But if something like this happens again, won't there be a lot of scrutiny and a lot of questioning of authorities from the outset in terms of the medical and how much sway the medical authorities have over everybody?
Yeah, if the next pandemic occurs while many of us are still alive, I think it'll be a completely different story. But if it happens in 100 years, like the Spanish flu happened 100 years ago, you're talking about a new generation and new people, and who knows what America looks like then.
8:59, we're going to make room for Jeff Poors on the way next on FM Talk 106.5.